it does that really hilarious thing where it chats and tells you it's recording in progress. Have you got a little recording
side? Content to it. Oh, we're live.
Yeah, we are live. And oh God, I don't even know what number episode this is now. It's number something between one and a number. I think it's like, I think it's somewhere between, I think it's like in the 60s or 70s now. I'm not really sure, to be honest with you.
Like number 66, if possible.
Why 66?
I've just got a fascination with sixes.
Okay. I'm sorry. It's actually 67. So close. 66 was a podcast breaking down. I have a list on my phone of all of them, basically. 66 was breaking down Cervelo's Caledonia, which was actually quite interesting. And has got a lot of like interesting comments about it because it was a bike they designed to be kind of an everything bike. And it's got mudguard mounts. So very different sort of thing for Cervelo. So we're on 67 anyway. And in this, it's all right. It's close. Second place.
There we go. As always.
It's the first loser. but you still get a medal.
Excellent. I've still got one six in there at least. So
yeah. And you can make a seven into a six quite easily if you fucked up something that you've written.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean if you're I do a seven. When I do a seven, I do the seven with the line through the middle of it as well. So it's actually that, in fact, that's really hard to make it into.
I'm just doing it on paper now. It's impossible.
Shit.
But I see where you're coming from. Thanks for that.
Let's start this again. Yeah. So, 68. Anyway, podcast number 68. Anyway, so I have got joining today Christian and Leon, who I haven't met Leon in person, but I've watched lots of videos of Leon M. And Christian and I met at Badlands in Spain. And we met basically because we kept passing each other throughout the race. And I think the reason why I'll chat to anyone in those kind of situations. But I think I took a slight liking more to you because you had a beard, long hair and tattoos.
Fantastic. It's good to know.
I literally think that was it because I was like, oh, I feel like I've got a lot of things in common with this man. And we kept passing throughout the race, normally complaining about something, whether it was your tire, feeling fucked and unfit, or the heat. I think that was probably there was a fourth thing, the fact that you left your tub of chamois cream on a post.
Yeah, and there was that point when I actually you'd pedaled past us at some point, and then you looked like you were trying to camp for the night. You came running out of this bush as we were passing you, right? And I was going, what the hell is Chris doing? And you came running out, and I think you'd either camped on an ant nest or some sort of like mosquito nest or something. So you came running out, and there was ants all over you, and I was like, right. And it was right at the bottom of one of them hellish climbs.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking, oh God, he's going to have to pack all his stuff up and then climb up the hill and probably try and get an hour or two sleep at the top. But yeah, I can remember that quite vividly because I was
that was an ant's nest. I'd gone into like a little, it was a good spot if there wasn't an ant's nest. It was actually a perfect spot because it was minus the ant's nest. And I settled down and unpacked everything and I was like, where the fuck is this biting me? And I looked down, got my head torch on, and I was like, shit, and just started like flicking ants off me. And quickly, I think when I ran out, I just packed everything up basically. And that was like first or second night. I can't remember really, but it's quite early on into the race. And I was not happy, climbed up the hill and because I got up the top and then started descending. I think I descended a bit of it and I was like, this is too sketchy. I'm going to stop for a couple of hours. And then, do you remember that time when we were trying to find water and it was three of us. Yeah, you forgot that one, haven't you? And we rode...
I'm sorry to butt in there, but Alex, who I was riding with at the time, Alex Bilson, my ride partner, we were only speaking about this at the beginning of this week, right? We were talking about water. We were mapping out one of the rides that we're going to do. And he was like, oh, there's a water point at the bottom of this hill. And I was like, not a chance. Am I going to trust you? But I happened to Badlands. And I was like, who else was with us when we went down that big, long descent? And we got there and there was no water. And it was like, he was like, oh, it was Chris Hall. And I was like, oh, God. And then for some reason, oh, I found it so funny. But at the time, it was so soul-destroying.
Yeah.
Right. And I felt responsible for taking you with us because we were all desperate for water. I think I'd run out by that point.
All three of us had no water left. And it was, we'd been riding for several hours without any water. And it was a really hot day.
Yeah. Scorching that day, and it was towards the end of the day as well. I think I'd been out for about an hour, and there was probably about an hour and a half left to the next town. And I think it was panic stations rather than think sensible stations.
Yeah, it was.
But we did. We went down. It was a great descent. But we got there, and there was no water. And then we all looked at each other. And Chris, I think the penny just dropped for you. You're like, I've got to go back up that hill. Before you could say anything, you just started pedaling. And I was thinking, oh my God, he's super pissed off that he's had to come all the way down here. So then I sort of got with the agenda, and I just started trolling up behind you. And then I think the next time we bumped into each other, and we found that little calf at the next town.
Yeah, and Matt was there as well.
He was, yeah. That's right. And that night, we slept in the kids' play park. There's a really nice soft rubber floor. And that's actually where we left the chamois cream.
So that day, I remember, because basically we descended down to that fake water spot. And I remember being there. And I was like, there's no fucking water here. I've got to carry on. Climb back up. And then you got to the top and you basically turned left at the junction. And it was this long, really long, it was a road drag, but it was a long drag up to the telescopes.
Yeah.
And I was on the phone to Fee, my partner, while going up that drag. And I was just like, I very distinctly remember saying to her, I am fucked. I've had no water for probably by this point, it was like 4 or 5 hours. Like, and it wasn't because I hadn't been filling up. It's just there was no fountains. We didn't come across anything for a long time. And she was like, oh, I'm really worried about you. And I was like, look, it's fine. I'll get to the telescopes. There's got to be somewhere by the telescopes. There has to be like a tap or something. So the first buildings you come up to when you get up to the telescopes were on your left-hand side, and they were like factories. So I rode around all the factory units trying to find a tap. And I found a tap. And I was like, thank fuck. Turn the tap on, no water.
Oh, punching the gut number two.
Yep. And then eventually we got to the top of that ridge where the telescopes were, and then you've got this road descent, and they were filming like a sport, some like sports car thing up there, and they're trying to stop riders going through. And I remember thinking, you can jog on because I need to get to some water or something. And so I just rode straight past it all, and then I was coming down the descent, and the only reason, and basically, is the fact there was a fountain on the road bit of the descent on the right hand side. And the only reason I found it was because there was a truck there with a bunch of guys washing up a load of plates.
Washing the dishes, yeah. We got there and the whole fountain was just like soap sooty everywhere. And I was thinking, oh, I don't care, I'm getting in it. And I think I just stuck my head in it anyway. And then filled up, yeah. I can remember getting to that point, it was like, oh. It's just morale boosting, is it, when you get that water after like panicking about not getting it? And then it was literally a big long descent into the town where we sort of caught you up.
Well, it wasn't. It was a little bit past the fountain. There was an off-road section.
Oh yes, you're completely right.
And then
right.
You came, which was like wasn't long, but it was like 10K and it was quite narrow. And then you joined back onto the road, and then it was a descent all the way into town. Yeah. The descent and that bit of descent was incredible. And then we found this little, basically Matt Faulkner was already there and outside this cafe and was like, order some food. The guy's going to close. And then I think like 10, 15 minutes later, you and Alex turned up and I was like, order some food. The guy's going to close. And he just made these massive sandwiches for us all. Yeah, and he was miserable about it, but he made these massive sandwiches. That night was the night that I had half an hour's sleep. It was. Because I rode out of the town and then
into Tabernacle Desert.
Yeah, I just before getting into the desert, I rode out just basically there. And Matt was fucked. I was fucked. And the guy Adam Palin was absolutely fucked. And the three of us were all kind of like, all of us were kind of in a mutual agreement. We were going to stop very soon.
Yeah.
We stopped at various points, like within, I don't know, half a kilometer of each other. And I think I slept for half an hour because that was the night where the mozzies were just like meh, all around the ears. And I decided, I must have been like 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning. And I was like, fuck it, I'm going to carry on. So carried on and rode through. I think I must have been on the bike for nearly 30 hours in the end.
Yeah.
And then wherever I ended up being at that point, I managed to get a hotel room and a bed for the night.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was awful, no air conditioning and anything, but it was a bed, and I went into this restaurant next door, and I ordered the biggest bowl of pasta, the biggest omelette, and chips, and they came in these like metal tubs that were probably, you know, I don't, anyone that's listening is not going to understand what I'm saying in my hands, but it's like a very, very large, substantial, like imagine a pizza sized bowl that was about 3 inches, 4 inches deep. Yeah. That was full of pasta. One was full of pasta, one was full of omelette and chips together. And I ate half of it, fell asleep, woke up in the early hours of the morning, ate the other half, fell asleep, and then woke up really early and carried on.
Well, carried on eating or carried on riding.
Carried on riding. So that is the glory of bikepacking and Badlands. Anyway, fast forward a little bit. Christian and myself finished at quite close. Well, Christian, Alex and myself, we all finished quite close. And Matt as well, and Liz as well. We all end up finishing, you know, really close to each other. I made like a 30-kilometer detour where I missed a turning right at the end of the race, which was hilarious, and rode down a descent before, you know, the last town, you had that gravel climb out of the town.
Yeah,
I missed that and carried on riding down the road. So went 15 kilometers down the road, 15 kilometers back, and then rode up the gravel climb just before the road that was no, the bit of road that was missing that you had to drop down and then climb up it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we, at the very end of the race, we all sort of hung around and chatted. Christian bought this rug for his daughter and asked me if I'd take it back to wherever the hell the start was, Granada or wherever it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, sure, I can take this rug back. It's absolutely fine. Because you were riding back. And
we decided to ride up and over the Velta Pass. Is it the
big one.
The Velta Pass. Yeah, the big one. But we sort of decided that after I bought this massive 6-foot rug, right, 6-foot rolled up rug, right? And then the sort of penny dropped. It was like, I'm not going to be able to pedal with that back up over the another 4,500 meters of climbing back to Granada. And I was like, oh, what am I going to do? I can remember, I think it was the next morning, passing you on the street, or we were having breakfast or something. I was like, oh, Chris, hi, how are you? You fancy, would you be able to do me a huge favor? And you're like, yeah, no problem. What is it? I was like, take this massive rug back with you. And thankfully you said yes, which was very kind of you. And it's now on my daughter's bedroom floor. So she's very grateful to him.
It was, we've not spoken about anything we kind of intended to talk about in this podcast yet. And that's fine because I think we did say we're going to talk about the rug. This gives a lot of background into how I met Christian, which I think is very important and relevant to a lot of things going forward, to be honest with you. Anyway, how our kind of, I guess, almost more of a working relationship maybe started was we had dinner the night of the race. Everyone was absolutely fucked. I think you had a massive steak, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I can't remember what I had. I had some vegetarian concoction of madness. And we had a big table of all of us eating dinner together. And it was really lovely. And we just got chatting about stuff. And a big thing that we talked about was ride fuel. We talked about it for a long time. Fast forward some period of time. Sturka.
Yes, here we are. Here we are. So yeah, Badlands was the sort of the final validation for Circa, which are the endurance sports fields that we've sort of developed. It actually goes a lot further back. So when, you know, we initially signed up for Badlands, I think it was about, must have been November 2020 or whenever they went live. So, and then beyond that became all the training, but probably just like the year before that, I probably got back on my bike for the first time in a long time. Well, I think it was about 2019. I finally got back on my bike after sort of making some like quite big lifestyle changes. I'll be open book here. I sort of found myself having a bit of a drinking drugs problem, basically, as you do. I sort of grew up, you know, drinking and having fun, and then moved to the big city and, you know, drinking and having fun. And then it got to the extent where it was sort of taking over my life. So, and as a business owner and a new dad and, you know, someone that loves sport, especially around my bike, it was like nothing was making me happy anymore. So back end of 2018, I made a conscious life decision to completely go sober, kick everything on the head and just focus on my daughter and focus on myself, right? So from that point in time, I ended up getting back on my bike, ended up starting this whole endurance story all over again. And, you know, being like our core company, we manufacture and develop all sorts of supplements, you know, sports endurance, sports type products, through to wellness products, to CBD hemp products, to supplements, topicals, cosmetics, all sorts of beautiful products. So that's when I went to Leon and said, look, can you develop something for me to help me when I'm pedaling on my bike? And Leon was like, yeah, not a problem. So fast forward a little bit, from 2020 and then all the way through 2021, Leon and his the sports innovation R&D team were working tirelessly to develop a product that one I could carry and one that would fuel all these amazing sort of newfound endurance ambitions that I had. So we went through the development stage on the products. I think early 2020 we were like sort of testing stage. Products probably weren't quite right, so we had to do a lot of sort of background research, all sorts of R&D, lots of sort of tinkering with the product. And then my idea was to launch sort of summer 2021. But we wanted to get the product right. We wanted to like test it in real life situations. So we had loads of amazing athletes test the products throughout that year. And then, as I mentioned before, I went on this massive rant, is that sort of Badlands was the sort of validation for us. There was me and 9 other riders that we'd given the product to, and every one of us that were using the Stoker products made it to the finish line, which was absolutely fantastic. You know, we can't take full credit for that, but what we do know is that our products definitely help people within the Badlands endurance race get to the finish line. And that might be through hydration, through fueling with the carbohydrates, or just giving them that extra kick when they needed it most. So, you know, at Badlands was the final tick or the final piece of the puzzle for us. We've done all the, you know, market research, we've done all the development, we've done all the R&D, we've done all the science studies, working with likes of Hull universities, all that sort of stuff. And we actually got the product validation we needed to go to market at that point in time. And I think when we were having the conversation after the race, you know, I was super interested to find out like what everyone else had used to fuel throughout the event. You know, were you using certain drinks? Were you using actual real food or solid foods? Or were you using anything that I've never heard of before? So I think I had lots of conversations like I had with you at that night. We've looked like everyone from like the, you know, the fast top performance athletes right down to everyone that sort of finished, you know, 5-6 days in, right? Just to find out how and what they use to fuel this type of event. And then from there, it's, you know, that type of data or understanding of different people with different strategies and different needs used in this type of endurance event. So yeah, that's where we are now. And then we sort of launched the brand and the products November 2021. So really, really new. But after we got that product validation, we finalized everything and got it to market. So yeah, we've been live a couple months now. Everything seems to be moving in the right direction.
So I think I first tested out the products when I went to Mallorca. And yeah. I think my first impressions, first of all, were how the fuck do I pronounce the name? purely as a dyslexic person who is not very at keep with words. At one point I was like, is it Stiker? Is it Sticker? And then I basically listened to what you said a lot.
Yeah.
And then it eventually stuck in my mind.
We quite like the idea of people just pronouncing whatever they like to pronounce. You know, if it's Sturker, Sticker, or whatever they want. You know, it's the word itself comes from the old Norse meaning of strength. Leon, I think you have more knowledge on that, or something wise to say. But no, that's where the word comes from, Sturker, which means strength in Old Norse. And I've got, well, I like to think Viking roots in my family tree, but more sort of Scandinavian, if anything. But so we wanted to have some sort of, you know, link into, you know, Old Norse traditions or something like that, and something that had a bit more meaning. And Sturker just sort of fitted the bill.
It's a good name. It is a good name, though. And then the other thing that I really liked, and I think I noticed more with the fight, because the what I had was actually sort of like test samples when I was out in Mallorca. And then I got a selection of goodies in the finished sort of packaging. And do you know what one of the most satisfying things for me was, is that the packaging is full to the top. Like,
yeah.
It's like you and what I mean as an example is when you used to buy a packet of Walker's crisps when you were a kid, I'm pretty certain they were quite full. And you buy a packet of Walker's crisps now and it's half empty.
Yeah.
And it's really disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you get these packages. Go on.
No, sorry. Go on. You carry on.
I was just going to say, when you get the packages for the, you know, specifically, I think for, you know, the carb drinks, they're like, there's no giving that. That's full to the brim. Yeah. And it's very satisfying.
So there's reasons, the manufacturing reason to have an air or space in the packaging is for any backspill, which means when the machines are filling these sachets or a bag of crisps, right, they've got to be a certain amount of space in there. So when the machines put whatever material into the packaging, it doesn't kick sort of backspill out, so there's not powder everywhere or there's not crisps everywhere, and then it reduces the or eliminates the amount of waste on the filling line, right? Mm-hmm. However, because we wanted this to be for endurance athletes, right, we knew that space was going to be super key, right? So I had to, like, the first product samples I got, the packagings were a lot bigger because this is what my production department recommended, so we wouldn't have this wastage. So we had to go, like, I wasn't happy with that, so I made a real put my foot down, basically, and said, look, we need to work on an SOP or a manufacturing procedure which we can eliminate that wastage, right? So in theory, you're carrying what you need to carry and not just a load of empty space or air. So I'm glad you noticed that, actually. No one else has.
it just makes so much sense, and it is, as I said, it's really satisfying because it's like, this is full to the brim. You, in the simple way of wording it, you feel like you're getting your money's worth, not half a packet of crisps, you're getting a full packet of crisps. You know?
Because one thing that was key at the start of this project, or this sort of brief in essence, is that people have got to be able to carry them, right? So transportability is like something that we've looked at, right? And 90 grams of carbohydrates, unfortunately, it's quite big. It's like a tennis ball size, maybe. Yeah. Well, think of it as a tennis ball size so people can picture it who's listening. So trying to compress that into a tablet or an effervescent tablet or something small, it's quite impossible, right? And then when you, what generally happens when you compress something to make it smaller, transportable, you've got to put more ingredients in there to then let it disperse at the other end, right? And one thing that we've done with these products is completely take everything out of them. So it's just the key ingredients that you need in there. There's no added preservatives. The drink mixes don't have added flavorings. It's like just real core ingredients in there for performance reasons. So the transportability was super key. We knew we couldn't compress them, so we had to try and do something where we could save the tiny amounts of space and weight, and that was with making sure the packs are filled to the brim. So you can sort of squeeze as much in your frame bags or your sort of bike packs as you can.
The other thing to mention there, which you said, is they're not flavored.
Yeah.
They're not artificially flavored, but there is definitely a flavor.
Yes, Leon, you probably want to answer more of this. There's no artificials or natural flavorings in the mixed drinks. One is because of sort of GI discomfort as well, is that the fact when you add more ingredients in there, when you're consuming an awful lot of these types of drinks, you want it to be as gentle on the stomach as possible. And, you know, if you overload on carbs, that can have a detrimental effect as well. But that to eliminate the GI discomfort, like trying to, we took everything out that didn't need to be in there. So they're naturally sweet because of the materials that are in there, but there's no added flavor. And so they're not specifically flavored. They're not like a blackcurrant or a tropical flavor. They're just unflavored, basically. And where some of the other products we've had to put, like, again, they're unflavored, but the gels, for example, the base of them, we use like a natural fruit extract, a natural fruit powder as a carrier. So all of our active ingredients are carried within this natural fruit powder. But again, we haven't actually put flavorings in there to make them flavors. We've tried to keep them as clean as possible.
I think it's the nitro ones that taste amazing.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
They're a mixed bag, but I think that's the beetroot, because there's a load of beetroot extract and amaranthus leaf extract in there, so you're kind of tasting the naturalness as opposed to the fruit powders of the extracts, which is a kind of sweet but savory taste, I guess, at the same time.
Yeah, that's a really good way of wording it. And I mean, it makes sense with the beetroot now because of the color of it as well. It's a very dark color.
We say beetroot, but it's the natural nitrates, right? Yeah. Which is derived from beetroot, right? So we'll probably touch on a bit more about the products in a minute, but like natural nitrates are absolutely fantastic for lowering ammonia in the blood, which then battles fatigue, right? Yeah. So, and I'm just thinking back to Badlands after the Tabernacle Desert, right? Where you managed to get a beautiful night's sleep and loads of pasta into you.
Yeah.
I had a massive issue with I had 4 hours in a kid's play park, sleeping, that is. That's so I was sleeping in a kid's play park, and then it was about 3.5 hours sleep, and that was loads considering how much we'd been riding. So I had loads of energy when I go in the morning, and I got back on the bike and I was popping a bunny up over a rock. I was that excited, and that's when I ripped my whole tire wall, right? And then we spent the next 9 hours trying to fix it with gaffer tape and all sorts of stuff. Eventually got to Tabernacle, and then I was absolutely drained. But luckily I had the gel 30 nitrates with me, and I battered both of them because we needed to make up time, right? Yeah. And then we caught you up on a climb, right? And yeah. I had my head down, and I'm at the race, I was about 88, 89 kg. I'm a big guy, right? And it was probably the most impressive bit of climbing I've ever done on a bike in my life, right? I had my head down. I can remember powering past you thinking, oh my God, I've got this. And that's truly down to the two natural gels I had. I have no other explanation for how I got up that hill so fast.
that climb was hot. That was a hot climb.
As I said, we spent 9 hours of that day pretty much in the desert trying to fix a blown out tire wall. So by the point that we refueled the Tabernacle, yeah, it was hot. It was very hot that day. But
the hottest recorded temperature I had was like, I think it was 53.4 degrees.
Unbelievable.
It was
unbelievable.
It was crazy. And and part of that also relates to what we saw in the 2021 edition of Badlands, was the attrition rate was super high. The first day, half the field was gone. They pulled out on the first day.
Yeah. That first stretch, right? Because people sort of dropped like flies. Because everyone underestimated the heat, right? And when you underestimate the heat, you do potentially two things wrong. You take on far too much water with no electrolytes or sodium or salts to replenish what you've lost through all the sweat, right? And then, or you just don't take enough water on, and you just get heat stroke, basically. And I think of a race like Badlands, when you're in the Sierra and them sort of temperatures, the unsung hero for me, which got me round that race, I think, was probably the electrolytes we were carrying or the salt products that we had with us, because we weren't even mixing them in water. We were just shooting them straight into our mouths, washing them down with like half a mouthful of water to reserve the water. Yeah. But you replenished all the salts that we lost when we were sweating. And the good thing about the salts that we've developed as well is they're developed in a way that they mimic the profile of salt that you lose when you sweat. So you know, you're replenishing the system as best you can. And you know, if we didn't have them salts there, I think I'd probably have suffered a lot more, you know, cramping, fatigues, all sorts of different things.
I just ended up, what did I end up doing? I think I went, at some point when I went into a shop, I bought a thing of table salt.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
see it on your kit. I remember there's points where my jersey looked marbled because of the amount of salt that was on it. And I never thought I was a big salty person.
Like table salt, you can't just neck a load of table salt. It probably won't be that 100% beneficial.
Leon's face is like, no, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Can you explain why it's better than nothing, or explain what maybe how it's different?
Yeah, so we've got five different salts in ours, which is a core blend of electrolytes, as compounds. As Christian was saying, they just replicate what you're using in human sweat, so everything you lose it, you're getting in. But we were at the Birmingham NEC for a show, was it 2 weekends ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was speaking to some guy, and he was saying he used table salt, and he ended up in hospital because he had dangerously low potassium levels, because he just wasn't replenishing his potassium.
Shit.
So it's quite critical. So, you know, it's going to help you retain water, but it's not going to replace the electrolytes you're losing, so...
Yeah.
So don't pinch any table salt next time. Well, if you do, just be careful with it.
It was desperate times, all right? It was desperate times. When there's a need, there's a must. So I very tactically have on my phone right now all the products, so I can easily reference stuff. So looking at the product, there is two variations of like carbohydrate powder. You've got a caffeine version and like a non-caffeine version. Yeah. You've got a caffeine gel, the nitro gel, which is the tasty one. Not saying the other one isn't tasty, it's just that one's really tasty. You've got the electrolytes, and then you've got the caffeine and electrolytes. So there's a very much complete range of products available. Why did you specifically choose to go through, like, to design, I guess, a powder and a gel, like, as opposed to like doing bars, for example, or chews or anything like that?
So mainly we've got loads of amazing stuff in development, right? But when choosing the initial product offering to launch with, right, we knew it was going to be like, I don't know if it was just about me and the races that I had last year and what I've got this year, right? But when it comes to endurance, endurance performance or endurance events or races, right? You most likely in a unsupported cycling event, you've got to pick up real foods as you go, right? So we know that carrying a load of bars is probably less essential than carrying, you know, emergency gels or a carb drink or some electrolyte salts, right? Because the likelihood is you're going to be able to pick up food along the route, right? If it be service stations or the beautiful dry baguette that we had that night just outside the Tabernacle, right? So you're going to be able to get a lot of carbs, calories, fats, and other macronutrients from other types of foods, right? So we looked at it from more of a sort of performance sort of angle. Is like, what do I need as a minimum, or what would I need as a minimum to keep me going, right? We know that taking on fluids or a carbohydrate drinks in water is going to, you know, it's going to get the carbs in there and it's going to get fluids in there. The gels, any type of race or endurance type race event, it would always be, the gels would probably be like my backup when I need the energy, and then the electrolytes, because the amount that we're going to sweat, right? So we sort of tailored the product offering that we developed at the time for pretty much, we tailored it for what I needed at Badlands, right? Yeah. And then that gave us our initial offering. But so like I said, then you generally pick a lot of the foods and other stuff along the route, where knowing that I had this stuff for Badlands, that I knew even if I didn't find a cafe, I could probably just about make it through with the supplies that I was carrying.
That was kind of, that it often is with anything that's, I think, ultra, is you carry enough that you've got enough for an emergency situation and enough for if you do not find anywhere quick that you can keep yourself going. Yeah. 'Cause at the end of the day with these kind of races, it's not necessarily how fast you move, it's the fact that you keep moving. That's the simple goal.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you can quite, as you say, there's always a cafe, a shop, or something somewhere where you can resupply. I mean, like, I think one of my go-tos on races is like, the things I always look for is some form of like probiotic drink thing. Always looking for that. Gummy sweets.
Yeah.
Pretty simple. Biscuits. Love a biscuit. Packet of Oreos. Great. They just fit perfectly if you've got cargo bib shorts. Pack of Oreos straight in there, pop them in.
Yeah.
And then I quite often will get something like, if I can, bread or peanut butter or jam.
Yeah.
Because that is like really basic, really simple stuff. And I'm vegetarian, so I'm slightly limited to certain things. But then like other things that I know a lot of people will buy in those kind of races is they'll get like tin sardines.
It's one of Alex's favorites.
It's disgusting to think about that. And I know some people who will literally just buy the, you know, like pizzas, yeah, burgers, like.
Oh, you've got to think of like when you're doing a race, right? And we went pretty detailed on the race strategy, didn't we? So me and Alex built a really like detailed race plan of like times where we want to sleep, where we could potentially pick up food, water, although we had that problem where we went down the hill and found no water, but we literally done it to the minute, right? And it's actually so remarkable, this fact, right? So we planned it to do the whole race in 89 hours and 46 minutes, right? And we finished the race in 90 hours and 13 minutes, right? So we were about half an hour off our schedule. Right.
Considering your issues with your tyre.
And the bike and all that sort of stuff. So in theory, like if we didn't have that issue, we'd have probably finished sooner, right? Which is great because everything we'd done worked, right? The race strategy where we picked up the food, the fuels that we carried with us and all that sort of stuff. So we had that detailed race plan. And then we looked at what we could feel, what we're going to need for this 90-hour period. So Leon and his team then worked together on a fueling strategy for us. He's saying, look, ideally, this is what you're going to need. But you look at the amount of carbs that you'd need to carry and you physically wouldn't be able to carry them, even if it'd be our products or real food, right? So what you've then got to do is take a realistic approach to it and go, look, what do I need to fill the gaps between these feed stations? Because these products, as we've like always like said from the start, and one of our main goals is that they're not built to replicate real food, right? The best fuel you can get out there is real good food, right? And you know, real good food on an endurance race might be a bag of chips or a load of pasta.
Real good food in an endurance race is the food that the place is selling, basically.
Whatever food in a place that's open, in my experience, is good food, right? So these products, we've designed them really to fill the gaps between them food stops, right? So you know you're always going to be picking if it be the Jelly Babies or the Oreos in your pocket, right? But these are to sort of fill the gaps between them sort of them food stops in theory, right? So you know, again, you know, sipping a a 90-gram carb drink over a couple hours, you know you're still getting some in there, and then back that up with a gel. So we came up with like a fueling strategy, which basically looked at what the maximum we could carry for 3 days, what the minimum we would need, right? Oh no, what the ideal we could carry, or the maximum we could carry, what the minimum that we would need. And then we took like a middle ground on that. So we had enough, we had designated products, or Stoker products for each of the days, right? And I think that was probably four sachets or five, was it?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
It was about 50, it was potentially, I think it was about 12 to 15, oh no, it might have been, it was about 10 products a day, I think it was, right? So, but they're pretty small, they're compact down, and literally my frame bag was, it was just dedicated for that. And it worked remarkably well. It kept us going, you know, even, like Alex had a real dark point after the Sandy Beach section, right? So we had to get caffeine in there, right? Because caffeine's really good for dampening perceived pain, right? And it also gives you a perk up, right? So whatever, 3 a.m. in the morning, we were hitting the caffeine gels, right? And then that got us out of, oh, I can't remember what the city was called. That got us out of there to where we had a couple hours sleep, right? So there was specific points throughout the race where we called on different types of products, right? And they really helped. The nitro for me when I was almost out of energy, and the caffeine for Alex. So, they've been designed in a way that, they can be used in your performance / training for these events, and they can be used synergistically with your nutritional race strategy as like a stopgap to fill the voids, basically.
So I think one of the things that you said there that's really important as well is using the product in training for these kind of events. Now,
yeah,
I speak semi from experience that you have to do that. The example I will say was the National 24 in 2019, which was the last National 24 I did. You can't test something for a 24-hour race unless you do a 24-hour race. And that, from experience, you could get close. You could do you could do a 12-hour race and you kind of get a bit of a feel of it. But there's things that happen in that second 12 hours that you would not understand unless you've done a 24-hour race. One of those things is throwing up. And I think I mentioned this to you in Spain, actually, the National 24 in 2019, my friend who's a nutritionist, whenever I do the 24 hours, he helps and supports me, and he's incredibly good at that. He's fantastic. He knows exactly, he puts a fueling strategy in place for that race, and he runs with it. So the goal for 2019 for me was basically to be stopping in total for that race for less than 15 minutes. The whole rest of the time was on the bike, pissing and eating, basically. Didn't shit. You don't shit in a 24-hour race, honestly. So we had one, had a very good refined plan in. The one thing we didn't have quite refined was in training. I was getting on very well with a certain gel. And then race, I trained it for 12 hours, no issues at all. In the race, in like 18 to 20 hours, really, really bad, like acid in the stomach, and end up throwing up all over the bike. And then thinking, oh, okay, I feel all right. 10 minutes later, throwing up all over the bike again. And luckily, I was due to stop for a refill of water and food within the next half an hour or so. And Will was like, that's sick on your bike. We need to fill you up again because you've now got an empty stomach. And literally sat there with the biggest bag of gummy sweets and was like, eat this whole bag now.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. So it's just literally me handfuling in gummy sweets to get something in my stomach again. And he was like, do you know what made you throw up? And I said, I'm pretty certain it's this gel. And he was like, cool, we're not using them again.
Yeah.
And
it's like, you've got to train or try and replicate as much as you can. But as you mentioned then, how do you train for a 90-hour bike race, right? You know, you're not going to be able to do a replica of that beforehand, but you've got to sort of, like, you can either, you need to train your gut or you need to train some of your eating habits,
yeah,
right? So we've done a very interesting experiment. So when I was training for Badlands, I'd done the South Down Way and the King Alfred and back. It was like a 36-hour ride that I'd planned to do in non-stop, right? So we've done it twice. We've done it once, completely fueled on just Snickers, right? To see how my body would react. Just to, I love Snickers, right? It's my go, like, it's my go-to real food bar. Absolutely love it, right? But, like, I can't remember how many I got through, but I was probably eating maybe at least two Snickers an hour. Right, it was like I was going through them just to see how my body would react to just that types of foods, calories, sugars, all that sort of stuff. And you know, for the first 8 hours, it was fine. After that, it was like I didn't look at a Snickers again for about 6 months. Right,
yeah.
Second time we done it on a fuel and strategy where it was about getting real foods on board, getting as much as I can, taking a certain amount of Stoker products. And I'd done what took me 36 hours on the first time. I've done it in 27 hours the second time, right? So there's like a huge difference. But there's also that sort of mental or knowledge that you know that one, I guess once you've done a certain thing or you've ridden 24 hours or you've ridden 12 hours, once you do it once, you know that you can get to that point and do it again, right? It's just if you want to do it on a performance basis or you want to do it to achieve something even like a faster time or a, you know, a greater speed or whatever that may be, is, you know, you've got to look at how you train for that type of thing, or you've got to look at how you fuel for that type of event to increase or to improve what you've done previously. Mm. And, you know, there's two ways of, like, sort of strategies is, you know, you can either train your gut to take on more carbohydrates, right? Either, you know, trying to get it up to probably, you know, 120 grams an hour, which you've got
that's
to train.
A lot. You've got to
train your gut for that type of thing, right? So that I think we look at it in sort of three different stages. Like anything under an hour, like when you're training, you probably don't need anything because of the reserves that your body holds. So anything between an hour to maybe 2.5-3 hours, you want to be taking on maybe, I think it's about 30 to 60 grams of carbohydrates.
Yep.
And then anything over that 2.5-3 hour mark, right, you're probably getting up to like 80 to 90 carbs an hour, maybe even more, depending on how fit you are or what type of athlete you are. So you know you're not going to be able to get them just from one carbohydrate source, right? So you've got to look at the intake of sort of several transportable carbohydrates, if it be the real foods, if it be our drinks, which is a mix of maltodextrin and fructose, right, at a ratio of 1 to 0.8, which helps the carbs into the gut and then through the gut, and then reduces any symptoms of GI discomfort and all that sort of stuff because of the way it passes through the gut. Leon, you'll probably have a more scientific take on that. So, but, you know, as I said at the start, you know, fuel, these types of events, you know, real food is key. It's just how you can maintain taking 60 to 80 grams of carbohydrates on an hour. So, you know, you try and get in what you can, but we've looked at another study that we've done is looking at ultra endurance cyclists next to ultra endurance runners, right? And I always find, for me personally, around about the 18 to 19 hour mark, if I've been pedaling consistency, that's when I struggle to get real food in. Right. So I've either got to stop, reset, rest, eat some food, go again, right? So, and then ultra running is generally probably maybe the 100K mark or maybe 6 to 8 hours in type of vibe. So everyone's sort of slightly different of when them points come. So if you can maintain sort of small and often, if it be a drink, an energy gel, a food bar, a bit of pasta, you know, Snickers from the, whatever it may be, if you can try and keep it as consistent as possible, then you're going to maintain that sort of performance level.
So what I found for the 24s, it was the breakdown was generally, I had a large, out of here, this large
nice. Speed fill.
I think it holds like, I don't even know how much it holds. So I had this large speed fill bottle cage thing in the frame of the TT bike. It has a straw that's there. So the straw is straight in my mouth in front of me. So I'm always able to sip on it. And the idea of the speed fill is that you could just put a water bottle in there, squirt it in, and it fills up. It's really easy. So when you've got a support crew, that's great. So I had that and two large water bottles on mounted at the back behind the saddle. And then on a little mount like that, you know, one of those guys. It's great. I've got these props to hand, you know. So useful. And then
Rick is now holding up a seat mounted bottle rack.
And then and then it was two gels, two bars.
Yeah.
And that was over a 4-hour period.
Yeah.
And I think it worked out between 90 to maybe 110 grams.
Yeah.
It was quite high. Like, and that takes
every 4 hours.
Per hour.
An hour, yeah.
And it, I think it was the last 4 hours was where I was like, I can't have solid food anymore. I just need to be doing it on liquid. And in that case, it was what we did was we basically like put more powder in the drinks to kind of like, it made it more syrupy, but it basically was meant, it was how we were kind of counteracting the fact I was struggling to eat real food. So we just pummeled loads of stuff into the drinks, which worked.
And that's what time it's trying to just continue, especially if you're riding at a tempo, right? Because, you know, if you don't eat, your performance is just going to taper off, right? Or your legs are going to be feeling fatigued and stuff. So, you know, it's just about maintaining your engine at that point, right? And if you are riding at a tempo, trying to eat real food, you know, it's difficult. So if you can get it in by a drink or a gel, you know, yes, you know, depending on what type of product you have and their makeup and stuff, you know, it could affect your gut, etc. But that's why you've got to do the training beforehand to make sure that you're ready for that if that type of event happens.
Exactly. And thus, this is why doing a carbohydrate-based powder for your drinks, whether that is caffeine or non-caffeine, is great. And the fact that you guys are offering it is fantastic. You know, from Mike's, what I found quite useful is you've got the 60 grams, the 90 grams. Like, it's kind of like, oh, I'm going for a short ride, take the smaller one. And I'm going for a longer ride, I take a bigger one. You know, that's how I kind of balance it out and then build from that in terms of what else I'm going to have food-wise.
The 60, the mix 60 for me is almost like, sort of, when I generally go out on my training rides, I try to start where, like, I'm fueled. I've eaten probably, you know, if I'm going out in the morning, I'll have definitely had a big bowl of porridge and dried fruit and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So if it's a sort of 2-hour training ride, it's always from the first hour in, I'll then take on that last hour. So that 60 grams is more than enough. Anything more than that sort of 1 to 2 hour period, that's when I'll be the MIC 90 in my bottles. Generally, when I'm doing a sort of 4 to 6 hour training ride, like I'll be doing this Saturday.
And then the addition of the caffeine in the 90, that's like, for me, that's like secret rocket fuel. That's the best way of, that's the literally the best way that I could think of explaining it, is that it is like a secret rocket fuel because.
Yeah. There's 150 grams of caffeine in there, milligrams, sorry.
Milligrams. 150 grams of caffeine would probably kill you, no?
That would be rocket fuel. Yeah. We maybe should have a look at that. But you know, I drink a lot of caffeine anyway. Before any race, I do taper off, or try to taper off as much as I can, right? Just because, like, literally, I'll get into the office on a normal morning and fill up my percolator, which is about a litre, and then drink that over like 4 hours until it's cold, right? So I drink a lot of caffeine, so I always taper off. But when you do taper off, or you bring your consumption down before any race, you do feel the benefits of it. And like I mentioned earlier, it's good for perceived pain. So if you're really suffering and struggling, it'll give you that, it'll sort of take the edge off a little bit. But if you're absolutely shattered and it's 3, 4 a.m. and you need that extra boost, then get that into your bottle rather than the standard MIC 90. It just gives you that little bit of extra.
Yeah. And then similarly with the bit that I find very interesting with the gels is like the caffeine gel makes a lot of sense. The nitro one was something that I was, to be honest, was kind of, I'd never seen it before. Like, it's something completely new to me.
Well, and there's a bit of a, like, there's more of a story for the gels, actually. And this is, Hull University is doing a really interesting study on it now. But I'll let Leon tell you about they can be synergistically taken in certain order to help performance. But I'll let Leon's probably best to sort of take us through why they've been designed the way they have been.
Yeah, so... Yeah, it's three gels in total. There's the gel 30, Well, it's Gel 30. There's the Gel 30 Nitro, and then there's the Gel 30 Caffeine. So the Gel 30 contains L-citrulline and L-arginine. Both of them, so your body naturally converts both of those into grams of carbohydrates. Thank you.
Yeah, just held up a sticky for him.
I lost the game now, I've lost it. But the L-citrulline and L-arginine, your body naturally converts those into nitric oxide. So what it's doing is just getting your body used to the metabolic process of creating nitrates and using them, utilizing them. Mm-hmm. So if you take that first and then you take the nitrates, which are the natural nitrate sources, you're going to be utilizing a lot more of those nitrates. And then kind of after that, when you're pushing on at the end, you've got the caffeine and L-theanine. So the L-theanine sort of, instead of having a peak of going straight up and then straight down with the caffeine, you're kind of, it takes off. So you're just going on a slow wave, not having the crash, and it's kind of dragging it out, especially good for kind of your last 2 hours of a race.
So in simple terms, the Gel 30 is like your daily go-to if you're going out for a couple hours, right? But it's also a precursor to the nitrate, right? So longer events, it would be like the Gel 30 followed by the Gel Nitro. And Gel Nitro is, you get some nitrates in there and just helps with that performance. And then the caffeine one, as Leon said then, it's got L-theanine, which rather than if you just take that much caffeine, you'd just spike and then you'd see the slump right there. It just helps level it off a little bit. So if you're looking at a sort of probably a sort of 6 to 8 hour race, you could take them in that specific order. You don't have to take them in that order, but to get like a performance level result or a target or ambition, you could sort of tailor it to be taken in certain order.
It's a really good way of thinking how to structure the process of how to take products. Because I think, especially for the longer stuff, people maybe don't quite understand that side of it so much. And when I say longer, I'm talking not necessarily ultra distance races. I'm also talking like, 12-hour time trials, 100-mile time trials, that kind of thing. People don't necessarily know how to structure what they should take. And I've done plenty of 12s and 100s and stuff. And the amount of times you go to those races and you just see people like popping gels left, right and center, like literally. And all I'm thinking is you're going to shit your pants at some point.
Which gels you take, you've got to be careful that, there's a lot of brands out there that advise to take, 3 to 4 an hour, right? If you're taking 4 of ours an hour, there's 120 grams of carbs, right? That's an awful lot to take, if you're not trained for that. So we probably wouldn't advise that amount. We don't advise that amount of hours. But yeah, as they can be sort of synergistically taken, as we've mentioned there. Plus, they're probably different to what you've tasted out there as well, like the flavors, the consistency of them. And one thing what I was just thinking then is before Badlands and last year, there's a lot like finding what you need to take for these type of events is quite difficult. How do I use Sturka? How do I use any other products out there? There's a lot of information out there, what carbohydrates, fats of how, what you should be doing. But I think, fueling strategies was difficult for me a couple of years ago when we first looked into it. I was like, what do I need to do, 18-hour bike ride? So one thing that we've got going live on the website next week is our new fuel guide, our new fuel tool. So you'll put in your type of event you're doing, if it's be cycling, running, swimming, etc. If it's supported or unsupported, the tempo or the pace that you'll be riding at, and there's a few other things, i.e. could it be a TT or a ultra endurance type event. So you answer these, you fill in your details, and it'll give you our advice on what your fueling strategy should look like, right? And there'll be a really neat little downloadable pivot card that you can take with you, or you can cut out and stick somewhere on your bike. So that'll be live on the website next week. So it'll give you your fueling strategy for the data, or the information that you've put in, which would be super handy for everyone.
And the website is styrkr.com, which is spelled styrkr.com.
Correct. Thank you.
I know that. And then the last thing in the range, I guess, to talk about is about this. There's a couple of things we can talk about. We kind of loosely alluded to the salts, the SLT05. There's a caffeine version and a non-caffeine version. So basically, salty rocket fuel, non-salty and non, wait, and salty, not rocket fuel.
Easy.
I caught that one up. And I mean, these are the sort of things which, I mean, we've alluded to it already, talking about Badlands. I know we keep referring to that race, but it's for you guys, it was such a good test pilot. And for me, that was a huge morale booster after spending 7 months injured to actually have finished it. We've referenced it quite a lot. And that was a prime example where having some form of electrolyte would have been so important to the field of riders racing because of the heat.
I didn't realize the value of them until I was there, right? And bear in mind, we've developed these products. We've got a great fountain of base knowledge with my team and all that sort of stuff. But I've never raced in heats like that before. And I didn't realize the importance of hydrating correctly with electrolytes until I could feel it on day one, 6 hours into the race, if that. Yeah. And after we started taking them, and we were like, well, we better get some of these electrolytes in, it completely changed the landscape for us. Don't get me wrong, it was still very difficult, but you could feel like you were managing it so much better by getting the right electrolytes in there. And it became a process of managing it rather than a process of thinking, am I going to give up or am I even going to make it to the end here, right? So it was such a huge difference. So any, you know, my best advice to anyone listening is if you're racing in, you know, high temperatures or anywhere that could potentially get hot, is make sure that your hydration strategy is just as on point as your fueling strategy as well. Mm-hmm.
It is equally as important. I mean, so with the electrolytes, would you have a suggested, say, hourly amount that you would take, or is it very much dependent on the temperatures? Or
yeah, I mean, there's lots of variables: how hard you're working, what the temperature is, what kind of terrain you're on. I think, as a general rule, for sort of just kind of standard, sort of around 20 degree weather, we say every 2 to 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Results, but obviously if you're in somewhere where it's 53 degrees or something, you're going to need one pretty much every hour. So it's, it really varies depending on the situation.
The
ideal amount that you should be taking, and then again it goes back to, if you're doing a 3 to 4 day race, like how much can you carry with salts? Luckily enough, you can, they're very small to carry. So you can carry enough probably for 6 to 12 a day, right, depending on how your, what your sweat rate is, etc. Sorry, I know we were probably getting through 5 or 6 of them a day, but that would probably be first thing in the morning, probably about 3 to 4 hours in, and probably more in the first part of the day, and then probably at the later part of the day, we'd probably have, I'd definitely have one before I went to bed just to replenish the electrolytes while I was, well, say I went to bed before I closed my eyes for 30 minutes. But yeah, you know, trying to, as Leon said, then it depends on the temperature and it depends on the terrain, et cetera, and what type of event that you're actually doing.
Also, as you mentioned there, is like everyone sweats differently. Some people will be more salty sweaters, et cetera. And I know that you can do like sweat tests, can't you?
Yeah, there's a bit of a hack that you can do actually if you're training, to weigh yourself before you go out and then weigh yourself when you get back, and that'll give you a rough idea of what you've lost in water or sweat, and then you can sort of calculate that to give you a sort of sweat rate to understand how much you should be roughly be taking on. But you can do this, there's ways you can get the sweat test to understand how much you sweat, because some people sweat very little, where some people might be on a winter ride covered in salt crystals on their jersey. It all depends. Again, it's all very individual to you as a, yourself as a rider or an athlete, sorry.
Yeah, it's I find it, that's the one that, as I say, with Badlands, I didn't think I was much of a salty sweater until Badlands. And the only other situation I can, only other ride or anything that I can relate to a similar thing was when I rode across Australia. And yeah, there was definitely several days, but I distinctly remember one day. No idea where we finished. No idea where we started. It was all a bit, that whole trip was a bit of a blur. And to be honest, is kind of, for both Francis and myself, is, I think it's like a bit of a touchy subject because it was really, really hard. it scarred us both. It's like scarred us a little bit. Francis definitely a lot more than me. He gets like nightmares about it sometimes. But there was the reason why it was so hard was, it was pretty warm, but we rode for 20 days into a headwind, like, and it wasn't like a little headwind. It was a significant headwind across the outbacks of Australia.
Yeah.
But one day we had a sandstorm. That was a laugh. And then I think it was literally the day after the sandstorm day where we finished and we stopped outside this petrol station. And because basically how the route worked was, we had to ride the distance of what it would be to fuel a car, because that was basically the next place where there would be a B&B or a motel or something to stay for the night. And because we were filming it, the idea was we'd get there and edit the photos and videos when we got to the end of the days. But generally speaking, there was a petrol station because it was the length of a fuel tank quite often. So they were, you know, we're talking big days on the bike, and Australia is big. And basically, I remember one day we got to this petrol station, we both stood out there, and that was the first time ever that I've been covered in salt. And I thought, shit, I've fucked up today. Because that was it. I was like, well, shit. Okay, well, dinner tonight is going to be the saltiest, disgustingest thing I can find. Because the problem on that trip as well was, you know, in the outback in Australia, similar thing. There's only so much you can carry. And then in the outback in Australia, they're quite often, there might not have been a lunch stop. The lunch stop might have been what we bought from the motel in the morning, which was whatever sandwiches they'd made. And then whatever like snacks we'd managed to get from the motel as well, because they always had shops and stuff. And then basically the dinner or breakfast was always just like crap food, because you're in the middle of nowhere and you couldn't have fresh ingredients really at any of these places. So it's all just crap. But that was the first time I've ever thought, shit me, that's a lot of salt on kit. I've never seen that before. And then Badlands went and pissed all over it, in all honesty.
Yeah. I was just thinking then, you wonder why you have nightmares of that trip. like it took us, 90 hours to do it. But you look at the fast riders that were doing it in, 45 to 50 hours, like, they were kicked, right? And to keep that type of tempo and to do that type of event in that type of hours is like unbelievable. Just puts it in perspective, right? But you know, you definitely find well that you've got to hydrate properly. And I think when I was speaking to a lot of the faster riders after the event, there was, you know, Uber was definitely one of them. I think Alistair, who else was there? Everyone said that they underestimated their hydration strategy and they all suffered because of it. Even though they were doing amazing time still, they all felt that if they got that right, they'd have suffered slightly less, which would have still been difficult, but they'd have probably done even better on the time that they achieved, right? So it is super important to consider when you're out there hitting these types of events.
Now, you mentioned Uber and... you know, he's just gone and won. It's funny because it's the race that was not a race, but he still won it. he is a ridiculously talented athlete who just seems to, he's a different kind of beast. He just seems to be very good at everything at the moment. For example, with the, I have no idea how to pronounce the name of it, and I'm going to do the bloody gravel one in March. Garang Garush, do you know how to pronounce it?
I say the Grand Ganache. But no, no, it's Tenerife, isn't it? It's the island hopping. You're better at pronouncing it.
Tenerife island hopping, let's call it that. So he went and did the road one. So the race itself, there was a mountain bike one in November, which I was supposed to do, but I was at a wedding. Cocked that one up. The road one in January and a gravel one in March. So mountain bike one was 800K, the road one was 600, and the gravel one 700. And they're basically, you ride across the Canary Islands, get a ferry to the next island, ride the next island, which is a really quite a cool way of doing it. The key thing to mention is it was never classed as a race. It was classed as an Audax because they were kind of fine with people, you know, riding together in a little peloton and drafting and all that sort of stuff. It's a bit more relaxed. And I actually quite like that. There was no prize for winning it or anything like that. It was just like, oh, you've come first, cool. Or, oh, you've come 10th, cool, it's fine. I guess with that race, it's the first editions of it as well. So it's really cool that he's gone and won the first edition of the road one, definitely. And although I say one, it's an Audax still.
Finished before anyone else.
Yeah, that's a good way of wording it. Finished before anyone else. Which just really shows his kind of strength and determination as a rider. Like, he's incredibly...
Oh, yeah. Super focused and, like... But his power output and what he can actually do, he's like...
It's crazy.
And he said... The last 3.5 hours, he was riding at such a tempo, such steep hills that he couldn't take on real food. So all he had then was two sachets of Mix 90 over the last 3.5 hours, and that's what got him to the finish line. But like all the athletes that we work with, including yourself and all the other amazing riders and runners and stuff, Leon and his team generally work on like a one-to-one sort of fueling strategy for them. But you've got to look at different events, right? You've got to look at the rider and what they're training and what the event is doing. And again, it's how much food do you think you're going to be picking up along the way against or with what you need to fill them gaps. And you know, we go through that with all the athletes, and you know, a lot of them are coming on board because of that great bit of advice that we give them, but we've got the products to sort of back these ambitions up, right? We talk about it in endurance ambitions, or we like to say destination next, because everyone's got this different sort of endurance ambition, or they might have a 5K. I've probably said this a million times, but someone might have, like, everyone's at different levels. So like my interpretation or endurance ambition might be a 10K run around the local park for charity or whatever that may be, which is an amazing ambition. And it might be the best I'll ever do, right? Or in a lot of cases, once you've done that, you then look for what's this next ambition, right? It's like, what's the next distance I can do? And then that then sort of starts to sort of trickle on and then drive this ambition of one, like you wanting to go further or wanting to do the next sort of challenge. And you, like you with your challenges, right? Like when I was speaking to you at the end of last year, I was like, what are we looking at for next year? What sort of challenge you've got on? And some of the stuff you were saying is absolutely amazing, right? So that's where you are on your on your endurance goal. So it's everyone's so different. So you've got to look at all sorts of different aspects. And one thing that you do when you do this more often, you start to understand your body a lot better, right? And, you know, from where I was 3 years ago to where I'm at now, I understand, like, what my body needs to fuel to do any type of training or race. Obviously there's the unexpected, which will come along. You know, like, again, going back to Badlands, I think I was coming down a hill that was about 30 kilometers long or something ridiculous, and I bonked going downhill and I wasn't even pedaling, right? And I almost died. I couldn't hang on. I kept on blacking out. It was the hardest descent I've ever done in my life, right? And I got to the bottom of the hill and it was awful.
Was it a road descent or an off-road one?
Off-road descent. And that just came out of nowhere. And like, we'd spent probably about 8 to 9 hours climbing up the big hill. It was where, you know, what they call the sea of plastic. It's all.
Yeah. I remember the descent as well. It started off road, and then the last bit of it went through a little town, and it was like an amazing little road bit.
Yeah. And that just came out of nowhere, right? And you know, like I had to overcome that. We had to get as much. I had to get fluids in my number one. I had to get more salts in my. I had to get some fuel in my. So, like the unexpected can just come up and creep up and get you from wherever. But it's sort of how you deal with that, not panic and sort of just sort of, you know, I knew what I needed to do. I needed to just rest and get fluids and fuel and as much stuff in my body or in the tank or the engine as possible. And then we went for another 18 hours after that. It was like unbelievable.
One of the things to kind of like to summarize here that you've mentioned, like there's a really, unbelievable list of, you know, athletes that you're supporting with a real mix of different disciplines and I guess goals and targets. It's a really nice diverse mix as well of different people. I'm just looking at it on the website now. And teams as well. Let's not forget that.
Like race teams coming on board. You know, we've got Team London, which is predominantly a women's based team, which is absolutely fantastic. Great group of riders. They're out, I think they're going to Mallorca next week for a training camp. So, I mean, Leon's doing a big presentation of them on Monday, but like they see the benefits in these products as well from a performance angle for the race season coming up. We're doing, we're supporting Neighbourhood or the Lacquer Pedal Mafia team, as it's just been renamed. We've got Class Racing. So we've got all these amazing race teams that are coming on board, which completely see the benefits. And then we've got all the other amazing athletes from endurance cycling to endurance running to marathon runners to Ironman competitors. There's triathletes, the swimmers, all. It's like the products, when you put it into that like performance slash endurance category, like can cater for an awful lot of athletes out there, and they see the benefits of using it. That's why it's so much fun for us and Leon and your team working with them, because we get so much back from it in terms of the data that we see on the products, and it's just going to help us develop new products in the future for these different types of disciplines and sports.
And like we sort of loosely mentioned there, you guys are fueling me for a load of stuff this year, which is not public knowledge yet, very intentionally, as I think anyone that knows me knows I don't like saying what I'm doing publicly until closer to the time. But there's a plan. You guys are on board with the plan. There's dates in place for stuff, and you know there's fundamentally two very large charity focused challenges and a few races here and there as well, plus whatever you turn around and say to me you want to send me to.
Yeah,
could be a good laugh. And with that in mind, like one of the things both you know Christian and myself had a big chat yesterday on the phone while I was standing in the garden trying to get my dog to have a shit. That's not a joke. That is genuinely what was going on half the time, and my phone signal kept cutting out because my phone was connecting from my Wi-Fi to the outside world, and my house is a converted factory which has really thick walls, and the Wi-Fi doesn't go outside the walls, so it just kept cutting out while I'm standing there and we're on a video call to each other, just cutting out, holding a dog, trying to get him to go to the toilet. It's brilliant. It's a beautiful moment for me, that was. I felt like I'm all grown up. But one of the things that we were talking about anyway was obviously the nutrition market in endurance sports. There's a lot of stuff out there. There's a lot of information. It's very easy to, you know, to look at brands that are maybe the more well-known brands. Doesn't necessarily mean it's any better or anything like that. But, you know, the brands that have massive budgets who support like big teams obviously end up getting noticed very quickly. It happens like that. But one of the things we really sort of talked about was the importance of, with any brand and product, is you need to try it and test it to understand if it works for you and if you can see it being used as something to fuel you for your own challenges and ambitions going forward. So one of the great things that you guys have done is called a test pilot kit. And now this is a really nice little package itself, where if I'm please shoot me if I'm wrong, but don't shoot me, actually. I don't want to be shot, but correct me. It's a water bottle, basically a bit of everything, isn't it? Water bottle, the carb drink, gel, salts, all in one package.
So it's, as you mentioned rightly there, it's just to test the product to see if it works for you, to see if you'd like to use it in your training, your endurance or performance ambitions. But it's got a little bit of everything in there. So there's a drink mix and sachet, the mix 60, there's a gel 30, and there's a salt 05. So you get to try the entire collection, basically. It's just like, for me, it just felt super handy and right to be able to try a little bit of everything before you do the sort of deep dive and go and get the, you know, the full packs or what have you.
Yeah, I completely agree. And with that in mind, we're going to offer free test kits, aren't we?
We certainly are. So anyone that's lucky enough to be listening.
Whoever's listened to us drone on for an hour and a bit.
Yeah. They're talking about Badlands again.
Back when I was in Spain.
So you know, anyone fortunate enough to have made it this far listening to this this episode, or number 66, whatever we decided on. And get a free test pilot kit. So go to Sturka.com, select the test pilot kit, and you can put the code in Halls test pilot. Halls test kit. So I'll say that again, Halls test kit, and you'll get it completely free of charge. And it's a good way of just being able to test the product and fall in love with it, basically, like the rest of us have done. So,
Yeah, that's an incredible thing for you guys to offer. As Christian said, it's Halls test kit. Does it have to be capitals or lowercase or anything, or does it matter?
Either or.
Doesn't matter what the case is. And I'm very particular with stuff that I use. And I remember saying to you very bluntly, I don't want to work with you until I've tried it out. I was quite blunt about that. And
the first thing you said.
and you were like, okay, that's cool. Bloody rude bastard, probably thinking in the back of your mind. And that's when you got me some samples to use when I was out in Mallorca. And for me, Mallorca was kind of like the way for me to start training again for what I had planned for this year. And every time I've been to Mallorca, I've either been coming off the back of an injury, I've been unfit, or I have actually just been injured. It's been one of the three. And I thought, fuck it, I'm going to have a crack on Sakalava again because it's consistent. I'm otherwise injured, unfit, or, you know, there's a consistency there. And I think I knocked 5 minutes off my PB. So
there you go. Yeah.
And I was taking all of your stuff.
Helps smash PBs, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, if that's what you're into knowing, is that, you know, for me, it worked. And I'm really excited for stuff that we're going to do together this year. I hope you guys are as well. Please go and check out Sturka and spend some time looking at the products in the range and get hold of yourself a free test kit and try it out. And let us know what you think about it. Because obviously all feedback is super useful to everyone, and I think it's greatly appreciated.
Yeah.
And it's Friday evening, and I want to go to the shops and buy some milk.
Oat milk or normal milk?
I'm an oat milk drinker, but I'm kind of taken to cashew milk recently.
Ooh.
and hazelnut. I quite like hazelnut. So basically, I have no food at home. I ate it all. As you're supposed to. I'm going to kind of wrap it up here. Thank you so much to both of you, Leon and Christian, for talking crap with me for the last hour and a half or so. Guys, if you get the chance to check out Sturka, please do. I'll put like a link in to the website, and have a good weekend.
Excellent. Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Been a pleasure.
I'm sure we're going to talk more about Badlands now anyway.
Yeah. What, this year's event?